Hello, everybody, and welcome to Mound Talk Podcast, the podcast where we have on professional baseball players to give us inside access and details of what it's like being a pro athlete. Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode number 4 of Mound Talk Podcast. Today, we're joined by Pennsylvania native Connor Hinchliffe. Connor is a minor league pitcher for the Philadelphia Phillies who played college baseball at LaSalle and signed as an undrafted free agent after his senior year. In this episode, we talk about Connor's experience in pro baseball, as well as being a throwing instructor for Driveline. Let's go ahead and get into it. Before we get in, just go ahead and give us a little background on you yourself.
All right, so what's going on, everyone? My name's Connor Hinchliffe. I'm a minor league pitcher for the Philadelphia Phillies. I'm currently a throwing pitching intern at Driveline Baseball. I started that position about 3 weeks ago. Just general background. I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit later, but from Pennsylvania, went to Pottsville Area High School, graduated from LaSalle University, got signed as a non-drafted free agent after the draft in 2019, spent that summer in the GCL in Florida, went to Driveline for the first time that following offseason, and then this season obviously got canceled, and now I'm here. So happy to be on here with you and talk a little bit.
That's awesome. Thank you. So you grew up in Pennsylvania. Were you a Phillies fan from the start?
I actually wasn't. I always get that question, but I was actually a Yankees fan growing up. So yeah, that's a little bit of, that's kind of bush league considering I was close to Philly, but I loved Jeter and A-Rod, Mariano, all those guys growing up. So yeah, I wasn't really a Phillies fan until I went to college in Philly.
So who was your favorite pitcher growing up?
Favorite pitcher? Mariano, for sure. Okay. Yeah, I always loved watching him pitch, and I got to grow up kind of during his prime, so that was awesome.
Okay, awesome. So at LaSalle, you know, you're a four-year senior?
Correct, yep.
Okay, and so you're undrafted free agent. What was that like, you know, first off, when did you realize, like, while you were there that you had a chance to possibly keep playing afterwards?
Honestly, not until the very, very, very end of my career. So I actually went to LaSalle as a catcher, not a pitcher. So I went there as a catcher my freshman year, caught, and then for the first 3 years of my career, played catcher, outfield, first base, and pitched towards the end of my junior year. It wasn't until my senior year that I was a pitcher only and I didn't hit anymore. So, yeah, honestly, I wasn't even thinking about remotely even playing professional until probably about like halfway during my senior year, when I was on a roll, I had some good stats, and then was starting to get like a little bit of interest from some scouts and stuff, and then got invited to a pre-draft workout, and then it kind of just went from there. So yeah, it all happened pretty fast, and it was pretty unconventional for sure.
Yeah, definitely. That's crazy thinking, you know, So, I mean, you pitched a little bit, but it wasn't like anything like this isn't your position until junior year, you said?
Yeah, and honestly, even junior year, like even when I was pitching then, I was pretty much just like pitching to help the team. And, you know, when they needed me, I still wasn't like I'm a pitcher, because at that point I was still hitting and playing the outfield. But then senior year was when it was like, okay, like this is my position now.
That's crazy. So, you know, you said you had some workouts and talks, you know, at the end of your senior year. Did you have an agent at that time?
I got an agent actually toward like the very, very end. Yeah. I had a family member of one of my coaches at LaSalle actually was an agent. So he kind of introduced me to him, and then we went from there. Yeah. So, I pretty much just, my coaches did all, you know, all the shopping and everything for me during the year. And, you know, contact with the agents and everything, but, in terms of like getting a contract and negotiating with teams, it was pretty much either like myself, like talking to them at the workout, or my agent, you know, making some calls for me after the draft.
What teams did you work out for? And is that like a, you know, like a college showcase where it's like, you know, like it, maybe it's the Phillies workout, but say there's, you know, 8-15 teams there?
Yeah, so I actually only worked out for the Phillies. I had probably like 8 or 10 teams, I think, submit me for the draft, but only like the Red Sox, Phillies, and Mariners, I think, were the only teams that were, like, really interested. The other ones were kind of just, you know, just some interest from, like, the, you know, the area scout. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the workout was – it was kind of like a college showcase thing, but it was only okay. for the Phillies. There weren't any other scouts there. But there were, like, you know, there might have been 20 pitchers there, like, you know, hitters and stuff, so.
Okay, and so – you know, from, you know, the point right before the draft, were you just expecting late round, or were you, you know, just waiting to hear the calls after, or what was going on with that?
Yeah. So leading up to the draft, after talking to the teams and then, you know, my agent and him relaying the info to me, I had a couple, like the Phillies and the Red Sox, that were saying, you know, we're probably going to take you late. Like, you know, obviously being a senior and not having any leverage, mm-hmm. like, you know, obviously it wasn't like I was expecting to go high, but, you know, at that point I was just like, yeah, I was just like caught in a whirlwind that like I can't even believe that this is even a possibility. Like, you know what I mean? So, yeah. So during the, you know, the drafts, obviously over the span of a couple of days. So like the first 2 days, like I wasn't, you know, stressing out or anything, cause I'm obviously not going on those 2 days. But, day three was, I think it's rounds like 20 to 40 or something. During the draft, like my agent was texting me and saying like, yeah, they're going to take you in round, you know, 30 something, you know, whatever. And then I think at some point during like the 30th round, they were like, yeah, like we can't get you in there. Like, you know, whatever. So then the kind of whole like free agent thing process kind of mm-hmm. happened after that.
So I know like the free agent market, you know, after the draft isn't as, you know, announced and advertised as the draft is. So, you know, you don't get updates, you know, every hour of who all was taking that round. So mm-hmm. was that something you, I mean, was that one of those, like, you know, right after the draft ends when they're allowed to sign free agents? Was it pretty much right after that, as if there was, say, like a extra few rounds?
Yeah, it wasn't actually right after. After the draft, I didn't even hear anything from the Phillies, like, at all. I was kind of more hearing stuff from the Red Sox because they were the teams that was saying, like, yeah, we're going to take you. And then it didn't work out. But I know my agent called me after the draft and was just like, hey, you know, it didn't work out, but there's, you know, there's a lot of possibilities out there for a free agent deal. And I kind of asked him, I was like, you know, is this one of those things that happens immediately after the draft, or is this something that happens in 6 months? Cause, you know, that's a lot of, you know, that's a lot, yeah, you know, a lot different. Definitely. So I got to, you know, if that's something that I wanted to do or not. So I said, you know, okay, cool. Like, you know, we'll cross that bridge. The next day was Thursday. I didn't really hear much. The following day, Friday, my agent called me in the morning and said, hey, you know, I had some good talks with some teams about a free agent deal. You know, they could call any second, you know, whatever, keep your eyes on your phone, you know, whatever, just in case. And then about half an hour later, the Phillies called me and offered me a contract. So yeah, it was awesome. And then, so the draft ended on Wednesday, Thursday, came and went. Friday, they called me, offered me the contract. And then Saturday morning, I was on a flight down to Clearwater.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. So I was obviously, you know, really thrilled that, you know, from the start, obviously, that I got a contract, but B, that like it happened pretty quick and I wasn't kind of, you know, in limbo for too long.
So before then, you weren't, you know, like a driveline guy, or was it just you weren't, you know, out at the facility?
Before that, no, not really. I mean, just, you know, I always did a lot of research and stuff on, you know, hitting and stuff, and that led me to the driveline stuff. And then once I started pitching, I started checking out their blogs and following some of those guys on social media and just following stuff that they did. And I knew that, like, you know, throwing weighted balls and stuff was something that I was interested in and wanted to do, but I obviously didn't have the knowledge of it that I do now. So my extent of weighted balls before I got to the Phillies was like, I'd throw like the green plyo like five mm-hmm. times before I warmed up. Like I didn't really do them too intensively, but then after I got to there, I really started to, like, you know, get an interest in it.
Okay. So I definitely want to go back to the driveline in a bit, but, you know, trying to go in a little bit of timeline. So with the mm-hmm. Phillies, when you got to, you went down to Florida, right?
Correct.
Okay. So when you got with them, you know, after all the, you know, testing and stuff you have mm-hmm. to do like that first week, was that something they tried to implement, or at the time, not yet?
No, they wasn't like, hey, we want you to do this. It was just kind of like, you know, they leave it up to you. Like, you know, they obviously have programs and stuff that, you know, they want you to follow and everything, but there's a lot of freedom to do, you know, whatever got you to where you are. You know, if you're a guy that likes to do weighted balls, great. If you're not, no big deal. If you like long toss, if you like flat ground, you know, anything, that you like to do. And even honestly, throughout that summer, I still wasn't like a huge like weight of ball guy. It was kind of the same thing as college. Like I would just use them to warm up a little bit and then throw with baseballs. But yeah, it wasn't like anything that they like had us do.
Okay. Okay. So what's it like? So how long did you have until, you know, you're in the Gulf Coast League, like in games, once you reported to the facility?
I think it was about 3 weeks or a month, actually. Yeah. They okay. took it, you know, we were kind of, you know, it was a little slow to start. Like, you know, you have to get all your physicals and everything. And then, you know, they have to accommodate for guys that are coming from like, you know, college playoffs and stuff like that, who, you know, there were guys that, you know, just got done their seasons 2 days before they got there. And my season was over for like 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something. So they have to definitely accommodate for guys that may need to take some time off and then start going, or guys who need to ramp up and stuff like that. So it wasn't until like, I think July until I got some game action.
Okay. And so I know, you know, getting to the facility, I know colleges also, you know, typically, especially bigger schools have a, you know, like an athlete section for the cafeteria where they have like more options than regular. So what was it like, you know, the difference between like LaSalle's, you know, nutrition area for athletes if they had one versus say, you know, the Phillies spring training or their facility?
Yeah. I mean, LaSalle, I mean, their nutrition area was just the dining hall, just like, you know, any other athlete or any other student. Sorry. So, the Phillies, on the contrary, had, you know, we had our clubhouse and everything. You had, you know, a nice, you know, dining area in the clubhouse where you'd eat lunch and breakfast and dinner. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they put in a brand new like nutrition station in the weight room that has all your like supplements, you know, fruit, like anything you wanted to get, like quick snacks, you know, before or after a game, like workouts and stuff like that. So okay. It was obviously an upgrade.
Yeah. So are they very, you know, individualized on like, hey, like, you need to gain weight, this is your program, this is your diet? Or are they just kind of like, you know, maybe certain guys here and there need some guidance, or is it just kind of like on
yeah.
your own?
Yeah, I know that they do like individualize some sort of stuff for some guys that may, you know, have specific goals of like, you know, we think you need to gain weight, we need you to lose weight, stuff like that. But for the majority of the guys, it's pretty much like, you know, they give us pretty healthy options and stuff for all our meals, and they make sure that we're where we need to be in terms of like body weight and body composition and stuff.
Okay. So how are you, you know, personally on that nutrition? Do you track? Do you have any special, you know, diet or?
During college, I went through a kind of a phase where I would track calories and all everything I would eat. And I kind of like phased away from that. I got to the Phillies pretty light, actually. And then at the start of the off season, I made a goal to like really get stronger and gain weight. So that was something that I started to like address towards the end of the season and then entering the off season. So I don't really do anything like too crazy, like just try to eat a lot, eat pretty healthily. Like, you know, I take some like, you know, just general like whey protein and stuff like that, but nothing like too crazy.
So not like a big supplement guy.
No, honestly, I fall under the category more of like your best supplement is like eating right and eating food instead
that's awesome.
Of,
yeah.
Know, yeah.
That's something that's, I think, definitely underlooked. You know, you see now all these like, you know, 25 different types of supplements that swear right. to help. And it's like, they all say yeah. this, do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially like for the vast majority of athletes out there, like, you know, eating right and getting and recovering and sleeping and everything like that is going to help more than like how much creatine you're pounding and pre-workout yeah. and whatever else, you know, guys are taking out. But yeah, I was never a guy that was just like, you know, I have to have my pre-workout before I lift and all mm-hmm. that stuff. And, you know, I mean, I did my fair share of like drinking protein and stuff like that, but nothing too like, you know, ridiculous.
So what was the transition like from going from college baseball to pro ball, like game wise, and even every day, you know, catch play and all that, but the main game situations?
Honestly, just like sharpening your focus and the attention to detail that's like necessary to be successful. You know, in college, like I was never a guy that like could just roll out of bed and like be good. You know, I mean, for the majority of my college career, I wasn't good. So, you know, being a professional, like, you know, in college, you can kind of be a pitcher, for example, and sleep through like batters 5 through 9 and like be okay. Yeah. Like you can get away with mistakes and you probably won't get hurt if your stuff's good enough. But, you know, in it, facing a professional lineup, and, you know, I wasn't even in, you know, a high level. I was in a lower level. So I'm sure throughout, you know, you get higher up in the system, it's even harder. But, you know, like every guy in that lineup can do damage to you. And, you know, throwing in like international guys, stuff like that, like the ninth hitter on the Tigers minor league team might be like the best hitter in some D1 conference. You know what I mean? So
yeah, that's a good point.
It's like that. It's like that kind of perspective that like, No one in a professional lineup's like an easy out. And if you make a mistake, like it's, you know, it's not out of question that someone could take you over the fence for an earned run pretty quick.
Yeah, definitely. So you finished that season, your first season, and you go last year, was it your first year just training at Driveline, or did you start working there last year too?
No, actually I went out as an athlete, last January, leading up till spring training, went out with another buddy of mine from the Phillies for the first time. Had a great experience. Felt like I really got a lot out of it. Created a lot of good relationships with the guys there. Luckily, Bill Hezel, who's the director of pitching at LaSalle, or sorry, at Driveline, he got a consulting job with the Phillies, so met him. We both went to spring training and everything, just stayed in touch. Then our season obviously got postponed and then canceled, and then he reached out to me coming out and interning for this winter, which has been great because I can train for free, work, learn a lot. As you know, I really want to get into baseball when I'm done, so I can learn a lot to help me as an athlete and as a coach, which is awesome.
And I want to say you were showing on I believe it was Twitter, you've had a lot of video just from previous years about your pitches, your grips, all this. Talk a little bit about that if you would.
Honestly, that all kind of started. So, I mean, I've been on the high speed cameras and stuff with the Phillies my first summer, but again, like even with the Rapsodo and all the technology, I still wasn't too keen on all of it. It was one of those things where like, I knew kind of what it meant, but I didn't really know like how to really take the most out of all this. And, once I got out to Driveline last winter, I started to learn more. And then, once our season was, canceled, I really like made it a point to like, the resources are out there if you can find them and are willing to look. Like, I want to know this stuff like the back of my hand, and to not only help me, but help other kids as well. I bought a really cheap, like high speed camera, threw on that all the time this summer. And was really lucky to be able to, you know, have a Rapsodo from, LaSalle. They lent it to me while no one was using it. So, I got a lot of experience working with cameras and technology kind of on myself first, which was really cool.
That's awesome. That works perfect for you, you know, going from working on yourself, learning by yourself, to going to Driveline where that's, you know, your job.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I mean, honestly, the best experience I've had so far is like being a coach to myself, which, you know, that's one thing obviously I've had to learn. Like there's good times to like coach myself, and there's other times where I just need to like, you know, not think and just compete. So that's obviously something too that I've tried to keep in mind. But learning all that stuff just from a you know, general aspect of like, first of all, trying to help me get better, but then also being able to take that and apply that as well to other athletes has been really beneficial.
Definitely. And so how long have you, I mean, would you use the video for, you know, every bullpen or even just light days, or what would you use it for?
So it depended on what kind of day I had. Throughout the summer, I was doing like various like pitch design sessions on my own. So I would have the camera up for that. If I was throwing a bullpen or anything or live at bats, I would always try to have at least a Rapsodo. Sometimes, having the camera up would be kind of a pain considering that, it's kind of a two man job and I couldn't do it myself. So the majority of the time it was just my brother setting it up and helping me with it. So when he wasn't available, I was kind of stuck, but, he helped me out a lot over the summer, and that was great.
So I've seen some clips of you, you know, training this summer and, you know, things you did different. Talk about like a little bit about what you, for those that haven't seen those videos, what you did this summer to find a way to keep training and developing.
Yeah. I mean, this summer finding a way to train was certainly, it was an experience because, you know, obviously I've been really lucky to, you know, been able to have all the resources with the Phillies to get better. I was working out in Philadelphia in the off season last year before going to Driveline. So had great resources throughout the whole off season. And then it's like, bang, you have to go home and find a way to keep getting better. So for the majority of the summer, I was literally throwing him. I turned my garage into like a driveline facility, threw up a wall, had a, you know, I built a mound out of wood to put in there to do like some of my mound work. So I was throwing weighted balls off of that. I'd play catch in the backyard with my brother, who was actually, he's a pitcher at Kansas State. So, and he was actually recovering from Tommy John. So I'd have to play catch with him, and he wasn't even allowed to throw yet. So he'd have to like take his glove off and throw it back to me lefty.
Wow.
So yeah, I was like lifting in my brother or my, one of my best friend's basements for like two months, just like literally just scrapping for whatever I could do to get, to not only like stay where I'm at, but also like get better with the time off as well.
Yeah. That's awesome hearing everyone's different stories on like how, you know, what gym they found or, you know, if they had someone that had weights and just all the stuff of everyone trying to like scrap together what they could.
Yeah, it was certainly, it certainly was made us be creative in finding ways to get better. And like, I'm sure a lot of guys weren't as creative and just kind of, you know, I'm sure there were their fair share of guys who didn't really do much and kind of took it off and, you know, but I think a lot of guys also like, were like, look, I gotta get better one way or another. And if it means I gotta like run around the neighborhood to get my cardio in or, you know, do pushups or throw with a net or what, you know, I mean, there was a bunch of videos and stuff getting thrown out there that were pretty wild.
Oh, I saw. Yeah. I mean, I saw some people using alleyways as plyo walls using.
Eric Sim was big for starting the concrete weights, and everyone was making weights out of concrete and everything. And that was awesome as well.
Using, you know, the inside of a car door as, to do J bands.
Yeah.
Especially at the start of it, it was pretty crazy. Just seeing like every day you'd see some like complete wild stuff you wouldn't expect.
Yeah. People throwing plyos off of trees and mattresses and whatever else.
I want to say I saw Michael Lorenzen using like a U-Haul or not a U-Haul, but like a, you know, construction forklift or whatever, just using like the, the basket of that.
Yeah. He was probably lifting the forklift.
Probably.
Yeah.
So did the Phillies, you know, once they decided, okay, like no minor league season, did the Phillies have any kind of like, hey, we want you to be on this workout schedule, or hey, if you don't have anything, or did they just kind of like do what you can?
No, honestly, they were great the whole time off of like, you know, being in contact with us from, you know, pitching department side for strength and conditioning, for physical therapy and PT, everything like that. You know, they were always, you know, well in tune with what we were doing and giving us guidance for, you know, accommodating for the resources we had and, you know, providing us with some sort of structure, through that time where, you know, they still got us on the right path.
That's awesome. So, yeah. So you said you didn't track, you know, any of your nutrition really, you just kind of like make sure you're getting the right amount of food in. Do you track any of your sleep or anything, you know, anything else?
I messed around with it kind of the same thing as the calories and stuff. I bought a Whoop band. That's for those that don't know, that's like a little fitness tracker thing. That's pretty big, for baseball players and athletes in general that, pretty much like tracks how much strain you put on your body. And then uses, you know, calculations to figure out how much sleep you need that day to be fully recovered. I didn't end up using it. I got rid of it, but that was, you know, unrelated just because I was kind of on the same schedule every day. So once I figured out like, okay, I need X amount of hours of sleep for today, I'm doing the same thing tomorrow and the same thing 2 weeks from now. So what I mean? But, I just, you know, kind of the same thing. Like I try to keep it simple. Like if you're eating right and you're, you know, some guys think the enough sleep's 4 hours. So that's obviously not okay. But like, I just try to, especially being on a schedule here, like, you know, I know if I need to be up at 7, like I know to get 7 or 8 hours of sleep, like, you know, what time I got to be to sleep and everything.
Okay. And so transitioning a little bit of out of baseball and, you know, the performance side, what are some of your hobbies outside of it? I've seen you're a big outdoors guy. Is there any like one or two main things you like to do, or just spending time out there?
outside of baseball? Yeah. So, I was a wildlife photographer. I took that up, during my senior year of college. I was a biology major in school, so I've always like been fascinated with science and nature and everything. So, I messed around, bought a camera, and then kind of just took off from there, from like upgrading my equipment and, you know, learning the spots to go. And I know it's like the dorkiest thing ever, but like,
awesome.
I thought that was something that I've, you know, done a lot, like just, I don't know, Same stuff anyone else does. You know, video games, movies, whatever else.
Is the the wildlife photography, is that something that kind of like, I guess COVID helped set up even growing into that, or is it just like, you know, something you've done always as much as you could?
Yeah, so I did it a lot my senior year of college. Then that summer went to the Phillies and like obviously didn't do much either. Once I got back home for the off season, was still doing it like fairly regularly, but still like the amount of training and everything that goes into it is just like takes up so much of your time. And a huge thing with finding wildlife is like it has to be at the crack of dawn or before sunset. So I'm not usually going out before sunset, and getting up early at sometimes in the Northeast, the sun rises at like 5 a.m. or something. So that's one of those things where I was like, look, it's not worth it to get up at 5 a.m. and be tired from my workout and all that other stuff.
Yeah. Awesome. And so I want to say, is LaSalle's program still getting cut? Is that what they're looking at?
As of now, it's cut after the spring of 2021. So this season coming up will, as of right now, be their last season. I was helping out with the team before I got out the driveline. So I was, involved in all that and had to go through all that, which really sucked for, not only me, but obviously all the players coaches there that are still there. I know that they're really, really working hard to launch a campaign to raise some money and hopefully get that back, like some of the other D1s have done, post COVID of getting shut down. So I know that they're really working hard to get that program back because it has a lot of potential going forward.
Yeah, and is that something they have, like, say, a GoFundMe for?
They do. They do have a GoFundMe. I can find the link for you, but I think, one thing that everyone can kind of help with is just like sharing the word. And we have a couple of media channels on Twitter and Instagram. James Santor is kind of spearheading that movement. I think his at is at James Santor. And on Instagram is at Save LaSalle Baseball. So that's two things that just hitting a follow and maybe reposting something would help. But as of right now, we're kind of just working through the logistics of like, okay, like if we're going to try and save this team, like how do we do it? What's the best way? Like, is it possible? Like things like that. Just getting as many people on board.
And I'll definitely make sure to put that link to the GoFundMe in the podcast bio and in the Instagram or the YouTube video bio too.
Awesome. That would be great.
Awesome. Yeah. So to end in a more, I guess, positive note from going to that, the little bit, like the half a season you spent with the Phillies so far, what would you say is one of your most just like off the field fun memories or just wild experiences?
Off the field fun memories or wild experiences. This is technically off the field because it wasn't during a game, but so the end of my first season, we were actually we were first in our division and we were gonna go to playoffs, and our last game, it was like we got a win to clinch and officially go to playoffs, or we had to wait for the other games or something, and we actually got rained out. So we got rained out, so we're like sitting there, like we got on the bus, the game got canceled, we're leaving, and then the other team that I guess was in the running like lost, so we clinched with not even playing.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was like on the bus and we're like, all right, like we clinched, like everyone's going like crazy, we get back, I had our little like sparkling grape juice champagne shower, which was funny because, I mean, listen, I was over 21, but we had kids on our team that were like 18. So yeah, you can't just be like boozing on the field. Yeah. But, and then out of the blue, it was like, okay, Florida's about to get hit with this massive hurricane. Everything's shut down and go home. So it's like the second time. It was like the second time I've had to get told to go home already in 2 years. So.
And so y'all clinched, like, but didn't even get to play.
We clinched playoffs, first of all, without even playing a game and winning the clinch. And then we were going to go to playoffs like the following Tuesday or something. And then in a matter of a day, we just found it on Twitter. Like the GCL president was like, everything's, everyone's going home, the league's canceled. So yeah, we that was honestly like the most ridiculous part of the whole thing. Like we were really good the whole summer, won like clinch playoffs, like, this is going to be awesome, first summer going to playoffs, it'd be cool. and then we got sent home. So
that's crazy. Been,
yeah, that's getting sent home number two already for me.
I don't even think I heard about that.
Yeah, it honestly wasn't even a – I mean, I shouldn't say it wasn't a big deal. I'm sure there were a lot of people that were affected and everything. But I think it didn't actually hit as hard as, like, people were predicting. But I'm sure it still would have, you know, washed us out for a week or something. But, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, that wraps it up. I just wanted to thank you again for coming on.
No, man, I appreciate it. I appreciate you having me on and talking. I really appreciate it.
Thank you to everyone who tuned in to today's episode of Mountain Talk Podcast. To find Connor on social media, you can find his Instagram at Connor Hinch, CONNORHINCH. And you can find us, Mountain Talk Podcast, on all platforms at Mountain Talk Podcast. Thanks again.